This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Local author, historian, and cartographer Rick Britton joins us every Friday afternoon for a local, regional, national history discussion. Now, last week we left off, the federal troops had just invaded Charlottesville in March of 1865, right there towards the last act.
A month before the end of the war in Virginia.
Yeah, the last act of the war. Everything was sort of closing down. By this time, the South sort of knew that it had been outmanned, outgunned, outsupplied, worn down.
Absolutely. They found out, the federal armies, that as they invaded the interior, you know, and Albemarle County was certainly the interior of Virginia, that the Confederacy was really a hollow shell. You know, all of the troops were on the exteriors of the shell trying to protect it from invasion. Once they got on the inside, there was nobody there, no defenders left. And that was certainly the situation here, because there was nobody here to protect Charlottesville. And it's good that nobody fought for Charlottesville, because the town wasn't burned, the university wasn't burned.
So the only thing they had to worry about was maybe a sniper or two.
A sniper, yeah. Some deserters, perhaps, or some renegade soldiers, yeah. But there are no records of that happening here.
Now, let's talk about what happened in Charlottesville. Before I forget about it, because I often do, wasn't it common that when troops would go through that there were sort of marauders that would come in behind them?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to mention, you know, we're talking about Sheridan's army was a 10,000-man cavalry army. And, you know, in every army, North and South, and through all of history, there are always the renegades. There are always the guys around the periphery. And that's probably even more so with cavalry armies, because these guys are mounted, they move quickly, and it's easy for them to cover a large amount of ground. So, yeah, there were those guys. And so there are plenty of incidents houses, mansions being ransacked, and personal items being stolen, people being threatened, things like that. All the kinds of, you know, things that happen on the edge of any army, North and South. The Southern armies were pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking with Rick Britton about March of 1865, when the federal troops marched on Charlottesville. And of course, they came in, the scouts came first, right?
That's right.
The lookouts.
The pickets, the advance guards, the pickets. And we're talking about, them being met at Carr's Hill, you know, right there in front of the rotunda. I guess it's University Avenue nowadays, by a delegation from the town, the town council. Remember, it wasn't a city yet. It was still part of Albemarle County. And that was led by Mayor Christopher Fowler. And I looked this up the other day. It was only his third day in office, you know, and here he was surrendering. And a delegation from the University of Virginia, led by Professor Minor, who was the law professor,
right,
that had been charged.
And
with
they stood out there waiting for these troops to come out.
That's right.
Minor had tied a white handkerchief to a cane.
To his cane, to his walking cane, and he was waving it vigorously there on Carr's Hill, and I think surrendering the University of Virginia, although there's a controversy over the university was actually surrendered or not.
Yeah, right, because there was a state historical marker at one time.
Right there at the chapel, at that little triangle of ground there, right in front of the university chapel.
Right. It said, on this ground, the representatives of the university surrendered to federal troops in March of 1865. Since that time, since that marker was written, approved by the state, and
installed by
VDOT,
that's right.
It has been taken down and substituted with a new marker, which is out in front of the university near where you cross the street there, right sort of in front of the rotunda, which makes no mention of a surrender.
I see. I see. You know, I wasn't aware that another one had gone up.
Yeah, it's right at the traffic light at Rugby
Road. Gotcha. Okay, I'll have to check that out.
And it does not include the word surrender anymore, which is very interesting.
That is kind of interesting, yeah. Free speech at the university.
Yeah, which it just reminds us that history is not the past. It's a story that we tell about the past.
That's
and
right.
Depending upon who tells that story and for what audience and what occasion, it can be different.
That's right.
We're talking with Rick Britton, local author and historian. So tell us, give us some more information about what went down when these Federals came into Charlottesville.
Well, once the town and the university were surrendered, you know, they marched into Charlottesville. They still had another mile to go east into Charlottesville. And by and large, most of them, except for the detachment that had been given the assignment of protecting the university, and it was only a small group, most of them camped north of the original part of Charlottesville on Park Street, what's today Park Street. And there's a fascinating story about something that took place at the farm The farm, you'll remember, is the same property on East Market Street going down to the woolen mills where Tarleton used the house there, the older house there, as his headquarters in 1781 when the British, when forces under his command,
we should talk about that next time.
Captured the farm in 1781. Yeah, Custer ended up establishing his headquarters at the farm in a newer structure, but on the same property. And I find that just so amazing that two of the most famous enemy cavalry officers, you know, in two of our wars here, the Revolution and the Civil War, that both would establish their headquarters on the same property. But anyway, it was owned at the time by a Captain Thomas Farish, and he was in the Confederate Army serving in Southside, Virginia, south of the James, and heard that that Sheridan and Custer were approaching town. So he got a leave of absence from the Army and came back because he was concerned about his family there at the farm. Now, coming through the Southwest Mountains, he did something that wasn't too smart at the time. He changed into civilian clothes, and the idea was to sneak into town, you know, unbeknownst to the occupying force, just to make sure that his family was okay. Now, he didn't know that his own house was being used as a headquarters. Now, coming into Charlottesville, he got captured by some of the federal pickets, and they quickly discovered that he was a Confederate officer. They thought that he was actually General Early. Evidently, there was a little bit of a resemblance, and so ended up taking him in chains back to his own home. Now, that still might have been okay, except for the fact that in coming up of his own stairs, one of his little daughters goes, "Oh, Mama, they've got Papa." Now, by all rights, by the military code, they could have hung him, and Sheridan wanted to hang him because it was a military man not wearing his uniform. But Custer, of all people, interceded and made sure that he only had a parole. And according to a man on Custer's staff, a colonel by the name of Pennington, who wrote some wonderful memoirs of the war, as Farish was leaving with his parole in hand, he turned and said, "Custer, I hate you as a brother. I hate you as an enemy, but I love you as a brother."
Because he had spared him.
Because he had spared his life.
Yeah. Right there in his own home, which
in
he
his
was
own
using.
Yard. Yeah. Is that amazing?
That is amazing.
Yeah,
what a story. Yeah. So the parole was basically, okay, you can go back your troops.
Yeah, go back to the Army.
And, but when he left, he was basically leaving his own home in the possession of the enemy.
But I think he saw that they weren't going to be, you know, his family wasn't going to be harmed.
Yeah, and the Federals didn't stay in Charlottesville very long.
No, they only stayed a couple of days. Yeah. And when they left, they went in the direction of Scottsville and Lynchburg. And then from there proceeded back to Grant's Army of the Potomac, Grant and Meade in command of the Army of the Potomac, around Richmond and Petersburg.
Right, where the very final act of the war took place.
That's right, and then, in Appomattox, on the Appomattox campaign, right.
Yeah, wow, that's really something. I want to share real quickly just an excerpt from my book, The Corner. Richard Thomas Walker Duke, who's a university alumnus and long-serving Charlottesville judge, I should say Duke Jr., because
that's right.
His dad, which you pointed out, was...
was in the Army.
Right. He was just a kid at the time, Richard T.W. Duke, and he wrote in his diary, he saw the Federals come into town, and he wrote in his diary back at home, he says, "Mother got up and went into the passage, my sister clinging to her skirts and I following her. The door was kicked open, and in rushed a lot of men clothed in blue uniforms with dirty yellow trimmings. The man in front was a hideous jimber-jawed creature with a dirty face, a hooked nose, and one of the most horrible faces I ever saw. This wretch, without any rhyme or reason I could see, caught my mother by the throat and yelled, 'Gee damn you, woman, where's your bread?' My mother gave a wild shriek and, tearing herself away, pointed to the storeroom door. The devil who had seized her immediately kicked that door open and, followed by what was now a yelling crowd, rushed in the room and began to loot." So these are the Federal troops now in Charlottesville.
That's right.
Bursting into homes looking for food.
That's right. He's describing the yellow trim. Cavalry soldiers wear yellow trim, north and south. What a great story, huh? And jimber-jawed creature. Where else would you find that?
Yeah.
Were they in the writing of the time?
Were these men starving, or did they just not have enough to eat? Or
they're not starving, but the Army doesn't give them everything. And so they always, you know, they range, you know, over the countryside, You know, trying to supplement their diets. And then that's just typical.
Yeah.
You
know. Now, when they were here, they burned the bridge over the Ravanna. Yeah, they burned some things, right?
They burned the railroad bridge. They found a couple of warehouses that were storing foodstuffs for the Confederate forces, grain and wheat and other things. They also burned a cotton factory, which later on, you know, on the same grounds were built the what later on became the woolen mills. So they burned the cotton factory. It was manufacturing cloth and uniforms for the Confederate Army. And they, you know, they confiscated a lot of food in the area. Yeah.
Rick Britton, local author and historian. And
you've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.